What I'm going to speak about is I spent the whole period of fall 2001 in Palestine, on the territories of, occupied territories of Palestine, which means that I was there before and during and after the September 11 crisis. When I decided to go to Palestine, I must tell you first, my interest was not to go with any international organization. It was to go mostly on my own, using my expertise as a nurse in emergency and traumatology, but also to be an observant, which means to be an observant, have the right, which is my right, to denounce whatever I think is against my... it's against for me what is fair or not, and to be able to speak up, and I didn't want to be tied by any politics, and also I want to go wherever I want with some limits, obviously. So I went on my own and I contacted some individuals, mostly doctors and any individuals over there where I can, and I said I'll go there, and then I'll tell you what's my expertise. And then we work together to see what I can serve best. So before I start, I would just want to tell you what's the reality, the two reality in Palestine and Israel, just by one very short story, which is a true story, obviously. I guess, I don't know if everybody has seen the film Promises. It's a very beautiful film made by a Jewish, American Jewish man. It was presented here in Montreal many times for a certain period of time. It's portrayed a few Jewish Israeli children up to 13 years old and a few children from Palestine living in Daesh refugees camp nearby Bethlehem. This story, the idea of the producer was to make these two groups of youth, young children, in contact in each, to each other, to see the reality of each other and be able to develop a certain relationship. And it works. At the end of the film, there was this very nice and very interesting and very smart a Jewish Israeli boy, about 13 years old, that went to the refugees camp, met the other, Kifa, which is a Palestinian boy, 13 years old, living in the refugees camp. And this young Israeli boy said, I understand why they're reacting this way. I understand Palestinian now. I see how I would never be able to live in such a reality. And the story goes on like this, and a few months later, the Jewish American producer went back to Israel and Palestine trying to meet these two boys that were 13 years old. The young, very nice Jewish Israeli boy said, he was 14 at this time, said, you know, I don't want to get involved anymore because my priority has changed. Now I'm involved in my study and my sports, which is quite natural for every young 14 years old. We all hope our children will do the same. And he went to see this Kifa in the Daisha, trying to find Kisha in the Daisha refugees camp. Daisha was killed, throwing rocks at the soldier at the entry of the Bethlehem. He was 13 years old. That's two reality. That's the reality of the young, of Palestinian people that have no past, no present, and no future. When we talk, especially these days when I was up north, in a very, very isolated reality where it's all white and quiet and calm, and where we find the highest suicide rate in the world. In the village where I live, 450 inhabitants, 10 suicide of kids in the last year. I was thinking about the Palestinian kids. And they were, we were telling, and I was watching TV, and I was the news, and I even seen things saying they're raised in violence by their parents. They encourage the violence, and also the way they honor their death. When you go to Palestine in the occupied territories, when you get inside of the territories, first of all, it's all, like he explained, it's 23rd, like he explained a bit what the Palestinian territories are. It comprised 23% of the whole territory, only 23rd. There are a few millions of people crowded in the occupied territories, which is only 23rd. And within this 23%, there is also settlement. And besides those settlements, there is the army occupying inside every city. At the end of most of the refugees camp, there was, even before the crisis, before the September 11, at the end of most of the camp, the refugees camp, there was soldiers, there were tanks, and there were at night and early in the morning, the F-16 sending bombs at the entry. And they were shooting every night, like you could see in Gaza. There is, you probably heard of this boy that was killed in the hand of his father, 9 years old. He was in Gaza, nearby the Netzarim, which is a refugees camp that is bombarded and is being every night there's shelling of this refugees camp. The reason it's because it's a refugees camp that it's very close to a settlement nearby the Mediterranean Sea. So they would like to get rid of those refugees. And so they try to threaten them. They threaten them by demolishing the house. First they start all night chilling the house, which are full of bullets, and some are killed. Or with the ambulance, we try to go and get those, but obviously with the ambulance we cannot go inside. We have to walk, and usually they bring the injured and the dead one to us, to the ambulance. That's the life. That's the life they live. We said they are violent. Their parents raised them to be violent. But they don't need their parents to raise them. They don't even watch TV. They don't need to watch TV and Star Wars. They have the tank outside of their camp anyway. So every time when they go out of the refugees camp to go to school, they see the tank. So I don't know. Maybe for most of us, we never lived in a war, and we never live in a place. And probably Native Indian can understand that, because I think many Native Indian have lived the same way. We lived with an idea that we have nothing. We don't exist for the rest of the world. Whatever we do, if we kill ourselves, that's a good thing, because we disappear. So, like, and if we don't, you know, everybody will ignore you. You're ignorant, you're stupid, you're just there. You just happen to be there. These kids, they're raised that thinking that, they have nothing else in life. There's nothing. They're living in a refugees camp. They're living poor. And they cannot even, like, go to school without having a tank or soldier, or at night living the fear of the bombing and the bombardment, or the chilling on their house. So, yes, I see many kids, like throwing rocks at the tanks, passing by the tanks, throwing rocks at the soldiers. And myself, at some time, it happens once where the soldiers were firing back. I said to myself, no, I was yelling at the kids, no, get out of there, you're going to get killed. And then, for what? For what? To go where? They've been moving many places. Their parents have been moving many times. How many refugees camps? Some in one refugees camp went from one to another and to another's refugees camps since 1948. And that's the difference now. Since 1987, That's the all difference. For the first time, the parents of these children, the older one, said they won't move anymore. Because why? To go where? To go South Lebanon, where they're being shot and bombarded also? To the Jordan, the same happened. To Egypt, there's no place. And to move inside Israel, they will never be safe. So they decided, and I think Israel never expected that. They decided in 1987, the whole Palestinian population decided that they won't move anymore, because moving means worst, means nothing, means disappearing. So when you stay at one place, then you face the reality. And facing the reality is not what the world expects. It means resistance. And it's not necessarily how the world would like it to be, but it is the reality of their reality. It means many things. I've seen resistance, house being demolished. Take the UN 10 and building this UN 10 on the house being demolished on the rocks, with the guns up there, with the tank above. They don't care. They won't move from that place anymore. And that's the whole difference. It's the whole population. No matter what the Fatah said, no matter what Arafat said, no matter what the world said, they won't move and they're going to resist all the way. Even resisting means get smart, study, going, sending the kids to school. Make sure the kids know what's their situation, what's their life, what they know how to identify the enemy. They know how to even respect their own people, to know their history. So yes, there's a lot of resistance. And the violence, they don't need anybody to teach them. It's there out there anyway. So, and when they say they honor the dead, I don't know, when I was looking at the, how many in the world, how many have cried the death, like since 2000 that the Intifada started, there's over and over and over 1,000 people dead. There's over 1,000 children being killed. Okay. How many cried around the world for the death of the Palestinians? At Jenin, how can we accept and try for 1 minute to be Palestinian and know that the world let a massacre being done without being punished? Not only that, the UN and this guy in the UN coffee that have experience, he was a black, he knows what massacre means. He couldn't even stand up and say, I'll go and see what happened in Jenin. Not. Did nobody will go and see that. So what do you think? As a Palestinian, and I'm pretty sure native people know what I mean, as a native person and as a Palestinian, we know that the people in the world don't care about ourselves. That's what it means. When they don't care about a massacre, they don't even go, and they have not the nerve. I had the nerve to go in Palestine. What's the problem? Do you think I have the permission, Israel, to go and work with the Palestinians? I did not. I work, and I see, and I observe. Don't tell me that this guy, like the UN, doesn't have all the power to go and sit, I'm going to go, we're going to go to visit Jenin. They did not. So we never know the truth. And the truth, actually, we never know that there is a massacre. Some people were contacted, okay? So when you are Palestinian, you feel let down. You feel nothing. So obviously, the resistance will continue. It won't stop the resistance. And no matter how the world sees it, they will continue. Because they cannot wait after the world. They have to do their job. They have to maintain their people. And I used to say, to tell everybody, if as a mother and as a grandmother, my children and my grandchildren were living in such a condition, I'm amongst the person that will take the weapon to defend my kids and my children. I will never let a tank and a gun at the door of my house and telling my children when to get out, and taking my son when they need to, when they want to take them. I will never accept that. I will resist. I won't move. I will resist. Okay, I want my kids to be proud of me. And obviously, yes, I will be scared of the death of my children. But the only way I learned to cope with death, that's the only way, is to be, at least to know that they didn't die for no reason. So if the Palestinian people praise their death, I understand why. Because do you want us to consider the death, the Palestinian people, the same like the Inuit people that killed themselves, to consider them as a devil? Why? The only way to cope with the martyr and the death is to see at least that they didn't die in vain. They die at least with the respect of trying to resist their own life and the situation that they've been living and their future.